This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Friday, June 17th of 2022. I'm your host, Ariana Proctor. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, we'll hear what's planned for this weekend's Juneteenth events in Longmont from in-studio guests. We'll have your weekly dose of sports talk with Jimmy Searfoss, and our regular Friday feature highlighting the work of a local nonprofit. Coming up at 8:30 on Connections, Jim Banks and Joel Edelstein will invite listeners to call in with their comments about the House Committee's hearings on the January 6th coup attempt. Then, a psychologist and historian of the Boulder LGBTQ+ community, Glenda Russell, will join to discuss the reversal of Roe v. Wade and the threat to other individual rights based on the right to privacy. Then at 9:30, Meredith Carson will be in Boulder Studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still ahead, but first these local and regional headlines with KGNU's Stacey Johnson.
Boulder fire crews responded to a small half-acre wildland fire during the overnight hours. According to tweets by Boulder Fire Rescue, the fire occurred on the paragliding hill west of Wonderland Lake in North Boulder. The agency reported it completed containment of the fire within an hour of response and will have crews remain at the scene to work on hot spots. The United States Forest Ranger districts of Clear Creek, Boulder, and Canyon Lakes of the Arapaho and Roosevelt National Forests enacted Stage 1 fire restrictions Thursday. The Forest Service restrictions follow a Wednesday announcement by Boulder County Sheriff Joe Pelley, who has also enacted Stage 1 fire restrictions for unincorporated areas of western Boulder County. The restrictions are due to dry and hot weather and increased fire danger. The restrictions include no fire outside metal or concrete fire pits, smoking except indoors or within cleared areas, chainsaw, welding, and torch use. The Forest Service also reminds visitors that the agency prohibits fireworks on national forest land. Boulder County's restrictions also prohibit fireworks sales and recreational firearm shooting. Officials are asking the public to do their part to reduce human-caused wildfires as the forest regions face another possible challenging summer. Suncor Energy Vice President Donald Austin told the Denver Post Thursday the company has installed new automatic shutoff systems at its Commerce City refinery. Suncor says they are trying to avoid a system malfunction that led to toxic air contamination and a clay sand mixture spewing into surrounding neighborhoods in 2019. During the 2019 event, workers at Suncor's Plant 2 poured excess torch oil into a unit that makes gasoline. The reverse flow overheated the system, which then exploded, engulfing the surrounding neighborhoods with excess carbon monoxide and a clay sand mixture. Suncor, one of the state's largest polluters with a record of violating federal emission levels, had another unit malfunction 3 months later, releasing a burst of hydrogen sulfide and an opaque yellow substance into the air. Austin said the company's new $12 million system would detect buildup and pressure and close valves before the reversal occurs. After a series of malfunctions and excess emissions, Suncor entered into a consent decree agreement with the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment in 2020. The consent decree issued multiple recommendations for Suncor to follow, including the installation of an automatic shutdown system and measures to improve its relationship with nearby communities. According to the Denver Post, the new shutdown system will not eliminate the company's emissions allowed under federal permits. Environmentalists aim to address the refinery's pollution problems during public hearings in July, as the company's two air permits are under review by the Environmental Protection Agency. Boulder County planning officials have a big choice to make as the county considers the future of the CMAX quarry in Lyons. KGNU's Luis Lacon has more.
In exchange for the county to allow CEMEX, a high-polluting cement plant north of Lyons, to continue operating, the company is trying to sweeten the deal. First, the company says it will only operate for 15 more years. Second, they say that when they close, the land can feed back into a designated Boulder County open space that surrounds it. Boulder County Parks and Open Space Director Therese Glowacki signed off on CEMEX's application to renew the mining permit, but told the Colorado Sun that the community should have a seat at the table. It needs to have the community's conversation without a doubt, Glowacki said. According to the Environmental Protection Agency, the CEMEX plant emitted about 357,000 tons of carbon in 2020. Some locals say that the plant running another 15 years could create irreparable damage. Supporters say that keeping the plant open will help sustain the region's growth by providing materials for roads, businesses, and schools. Once staff reviews the application, it will go to the County Planning Commission, where the public comment will take place. For KGNU, I am Luis Licon.
The Boulder County Commissioners approved 10 projects this week that will receive $36.5 million from the county's second round of relief funding under the Federal American Rescue Plan Act. Among the projects, the city approved funding for a direct cash assistance for low-income families with young children, the creation of a mental health services navigation hub, funding for mobile response teams, and more support for affordable housing projects, including one that will help residents buy mobile home parks. County working groups who developed the plan used community feedback and data that explored what county residents were most affected by the pandemic and what type of support they needed. The Daily Camera reports the county is still considering several other projects, which include a regional housing partnership, grants for small businesses, and seed money for the location of an early childhood community village in southeast Longmont. Arapahoe County Clerk and Recorder Joan Lopez is warning unaffiliated voters in her county that they cannot vote in the primary elections of more than one political party and that they should only return one ballot for their vote to count. Lopez remarked on Twitter Thursday the county's election office is seeing too many unaffiliated voter envelopes coming back with both Republican and Democratic ballots, and by law, they cannot be counted. Since 2018, unaffiliated voters in Colorado have been allowed to vote in the state's primary elections, but must choose and return only one of the party ballots. Colorado voters have until 7 p.m. Tuesday, June 28th, to cast a ballot in the state's primary election. Along with Denver's Juneteenth Music Festival and Parade returning to Five Points this year, many communities along the Front Range will be celebrating Juneteenth starting today and throughout the weekend. Erie and Fort Collins will hold celebrations and concerts Saturday, and Longmont will have its outdoor celebration Sunday with a lineup that includes Congressman Joe Neguse. We'll have more on Longmont's celebration later in the program. As a reminder, both the City of Boulder and county offices will be closed Monday in commemoration of the Juneteenth holiday. The Upper Metro Front Range region is under a heat advisory and air quality alert today. Today's skies will be mostly sunny with highs in the upper 90s and winds gusting as high as 26 miles per hour. There is a small chance of showers and thunderstorms during the late afternoon and evening hours for Boulder and Fort Collins. Tonight, skies will be mostly cloudy with lows in the low to mid 60s. The current temperature in Boulder is 68 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Ariana Proctor. Juneteenth celebrations will take place across the country over the weekend, and the Front Range of Colorado is no exception. Juneteenth, a commemoration of the June 19, 1865 announcement of freedom from slavery made in Galveston, Texas, became a federal holiday last year and a recognized state holiday in Colorado this year. Joining me in the studio to talk about some of the local events in store this weekend are Longmont City Councilwoman Shakita Yarbrough and fashion designer Prep Curry.
Hi, good morning to you both. How are you doing this morning?
Great.
Doing well. How are you?
Awesome. Thank you. So Councilwoman Yarbrough, who I should also note is a member of the KGNU Board of Directors, has been a part of the Juneteenth event organizing effort. Can you talk to us, Councilwoman, about what's in store for this weekend?
Yes, absolutely. For the entire weekend, there's a lot going on. So I am so excited. It can be a little confusing because we have so much stuff going on this weekend. I will say that there's a celebration on Saturday afternoon at noon in Erie. They're celebrating Juneteenth. Longmont on Saturday the 18th as well. There's a picnic in the park at Willow Park in Longmont. Saturday evening, there's a celebration celebrating our youth from 4 to 7, I believe, at the Longmont Museum. And then on Sunday is a huge event that I and you know, and other community members who are helping and volunteering, great sponsors, putting on at Roosevelt Park, 700 Longs Peak Avenue. And we have an awesome lineup, and I'm so excited about it. And then on Monday, the NAACP will also be putting on an event at Boulder High School, celebrating those who identify as African-American students who graduated in 2021. So we have a lot going on in Boulder County, in East Boulder County, Weld County. So I'm so appreciative of 2022 Juneteenth celebration.
So included in the events is a fashion show by Prep Curry, who also joins me in the studio this morning. Prep, could you maybe tell listeners a bit about you and your work?
Thank you for asking. I'm Prep Curry, designer. I'm originally from Memphis, Tennessee, and I've been in California since 2016. And I just flew out there with basically $6 to my name. My cousin told me to come out there to California. So I paid a lot of things that I could pay in just to move out there. And since then, I've actually surpassed the things that I thought I was going to do. I actually did a collection with Banana Republic, put that out, and it actually sold out completely in 4 days. And then I got asked to get on Steve Harvey, and a lot of other things happened after that. So I'm coming to just showcase what I do. I make all the clothes myself. I cut and sew them. And I'm just actually just trying to breathe that breath of fresh air for people to understand, like, if you want to do something and you want to be somebody, you know, you just have to put the effort to it. So everybody that's in the surrounding areas definitely needs to come out and see all the clothes that I do. I make clothes for women, kids, dogs. I mean, I make one for your reptile. It don't matter what you got, you know, as long as I can cut it and I can sew it, I'm gonna make it.
So as we can see, Prep, you're on a really successful trajectory in the fashion world. But for so long, there's been a gap, or at least a glass ceiling, between setting fashion trends in popular culture and being able to make a living at it on the runway. So now that you've kind of crossed over that barrier, what do you see on the other side for yourself?
What I see on the other side is 100% world domination. I mean, I'm trying to conquer and do things that that nobody is doing, and doing it in a positive way. So I speak about fitness, fashion, and faith. All these things actually is Prep Curry. So just like my slogan says, it's beyond the stitch. It's deeper than just clothing. So the glass ceiling is to make people know that you can go past what you actually are doing. So for me, it's just more so trying to keep the message alive of just being prosperous.
Especially in regards to that glass ceiling, how can Black fashion designers like you not only open doors for others, but make the door frame bigger for others?
By basically never keeping your mouth closed. You can actually encourage others by, like I'm saying, hey, come out, see what I'm doing. Then you can actually either ask questions from someone that you see doing things. That the glass ceiling is always going to be there when people are never actually willing to give out information. So be willing to ask questions and be willing to take constructive criticism. And I feel like there'll never be a glass ceiling.
And Councilwoman Chiquita Yarbrough, that same question could also apply to you when it comes to holding elected office. So how do you make communities more welcoming and inclusive from a position of leadership? And do you feel like this opens up the passage for other young people to contribute to their community in the same way?
Absolutely. So, you know, kind of like what Prep said, if you ask the questions and you inquire and actually willing to take criticism and learn from it, then you provide opportunities for yourself. And so in turn, how I provide those opportunities is by listening to the youth and listening to people, letting them know that their voices are important and their voices matter. And so when that is an opportunity for them, I believe that then they know that they can do more and they can be whatever they want to be. But as Prep said, they have to speak up and speak out, and it's very important for them to just go for it. You know, I just went for it and never thought in a million years I'll be a politician. So, but yet here I am, you know, and representation matters. Representation matters. So opening up the doors, my constituents opened the door for me to be a council person. And now is my opportunity to open up doors for others in our youth and other people of color. So that's very important. Yeah.
Absolutely. And especially in connection to the holiday that we have coming up this weekend. Can you talk to, like, both of you talk to me about why it's important for you to celebrate and honor Juneteenth? And we can start with Shakita and then move on to...
Okay. Well, yeah, it is important. So many people in communities all over the U.S. really may not even know what Juneteenth is and what it means. So to celebrate, I mean, American history is also Black history. Black history is American history. And so it's important, you know, there's a huge... the buzzword of critical race theory about teaching history in our schools. It's important for our kids to know what history is. So much, you know, people don't know who have invented all the inventions out here that have been made by Black people. So how do we do that? We celebrate and lift up those who are out here in the communities doing the work. And that's why Juneteenth is important. It's freedom, and the freedom to express ourselves, the freedom to show off our talents, the freedom to be who we are, and welcoming and inclusive.
Most definitely. Juneteenth to me is important because I feel like a lot of the things that we were taught in high schools and elementary was never actually based off of that principle. No disrespect to anybody else, but a lot of schools teach other races. They don't teach anything when it comes down to African American history. So we don't have that many abilities to actually get what we actually went through or going through or things that we want to actually get out to the whole world. We don't have that outlet all the time. And we only have maybe like three times a year that we can really talk about Black history. So it's very important for Juneteenth to be something that we, you know, represent.
Well, with our last 30 seconds, I'd love to ask you, Prep, about why you think it's important for people like you, Black artists and role models, to be present in the community in the way that you're going to be this weekend.
It's very important because we need more people to do it. Everything that it comes down with fashion, it's mostly European. We don't have that many actually African-American people that's actually given the spotlight because a lot of our ideas are actually taken from all the other people. So it's extremely important for all African-American races to come out and try to get some of this history and do what you need to do and actually get your face out there and be present.
Thank you so much. My guests today have been Longmont City Councilwoman Shakita Yarbrough and fashion designer Prep Curry. More information about the fashion show and other Juneteenth events happening locally is available at www.longmontjuneteenth.com. This is KGNU's Morning Magazine. I'm your host, Ariana Proctor. Up next is Sports Talk with Jimmy Sirfoss.
Hi, yes, I was looking for the people talking about sports, but you came to the right place. Jimmy Talks Sports.
Who?
Jimmy. Hello and welcome back to Sports Talk with Jimmy. I am your host, Jimmy Sirfoss, and the talk across the entire state of Colorado has been about the Colorado Avalanche. They are competing in their first Stanley Cup Finals for the first time in 21 years, and people are beginning to pick up on one of the more unique things that they do during their games. If you have turned on a radio in the past 20 years, chances are you've heard the song All the Small Things by the band Blink-182. It's the song with the line, "Work sucks, I know," and is felt by people across the world. It is a song that peaked at number 6 on the Billboard Top 100, and it is the band's biggest hit to this day. But it also became a rally cry for Colorado Avalanche fans. In every Colorado Avalanche home game, in the middle of the third period, the song is played, and everyone in the stands rises to their feet and sings along. The tradition has been going since 2019 and was started by DJ Craig Turney, also known as DJ Triple T, who was in charge of the songs played in Ball Arena for the Avalanche at the time. Now, he heard the song on the radio and he thought it would be fun to play at hockey games, and the response was electric. Turney said everyone loved it, so he played it at the next game, and the next, and the next, and then became something to look forward to for fans during games. Then COVID hit, and suddenly arenas were empty. But Turney did not let the empty seats kill the tradition. Now, when the Avs were in the playoffs that year, it was a special postseason where teams played in isolated locations rather than their home arenas. The Avalanche were playing in Edmonton at the time, along with the rest of the Western Conference teams. Turney personally sent in a request to the Edmonton people for the song to be played at the game so the fans at home and the players would have that home ice feeling. And the Edmonton people listened and they played it during the game. And when the fans were allowed back into the arenas in 2021, the tradition had not lost a step. And because of the success of the Avalanche this regular season and postseason, the tradition took social media by storm, even catching the attention of Blink-182's lead singer, Mark Hoppus. He called it amazing. So the next Avalanche game, wait till the third period, turn the sound up, and listen to 18,000 fans sing along. For KGNU, this has been Jimmy Searfoss.
Welcome to .org, KGNU's weekly look at local nonprofits.
Hi, this is Chris Schultz with KGNU's.org, and I'm here with Caroline Sinders from the Feminist Project.
Oh, hi, I'm Caroline. I'm an artist and researcher. I work at the intersections of human rights, design, and art. And so Feminist Data Set is an art project of mine that I started in 2017. You know, one could argue that we were taught in schools and even just through like conversations around technology that technology is more neutral than people. And, you know, 2014, 2015, 2016, 2017, there's a much larger awakening that that's not actually true, that technology is a mirror towards inequity. It is not neutral in and of itself. And so that conversation, that criticality was appearing a lot more around AI at the same time. And so for me, I was really inspired by a lot of that. And so I thought I would make a small project. And I realized that if I was going to call a project like a feminist technology project, but I was only really interrogating the quality of the data or like the topic the data was on, that wasn't actually totally feminist. Just because my data set is on feminism, that doesn't mean the data set itself is feminist. I realized that if I was interested in making like a feminist version of AI, that I couldn't just have feminist data. That's not quite enough. I really have to interrogate what does it mean to make in a feminist way. So even the way that I'm building this project, I have to interrogate my own labor and my own collaborations. And so what I mean by that is, you know, if I work with collaborators, it's really important for me to pay them, even if they want to volunteer, because I think pay equity is a really big feminist issue, right? Throughout the course of Feminist Dataset, I have worked with different open source groups. And so I've also thought a lot about open source contributor burnout, right? And so all these concepts are kind of buried within the project because I think that they are still feminist issues. So when people are like, I think ethical technology is transparent, and I'll be like, great, what is transparency to you? Like, what does that mean for a particular project? Is it making the code open source? Is that transparent enough? Is it allowing for community feedback? Is it having a process for addressing community feedback and responding to it? So what does it mean to then say that this project is feminist? I'm really interested in like, well, what are the steps or like the building blocks of that definition that are in one's project? So these are the conversations I'm interested in having in technology, and part of the actual art project itself is the process, not just the output, rather to say, here's like a set of steps you can do to build a data set using feminist values, how to actually gather data. Here's a feminist way to do that. You know, Feminist Data Set, it's a participatory workshop and project. And so like it's done with people. So yeah, one of the best ways to engage, if you really want to engage, is come to one of our workshops. That would be the best way, and we are constantly having them.
To find out more, you can follow Caroline on Twitter at Caroline Sinders.
You've been listening to .org, KGNU's weekly look at local nonprofits. For more .orgs or for more information on this episode, visit news.kgnu.org.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Ariana Proctor. Special thanks to Stacey Johnson, Luis Licon, James Swinson, Kiara DeMare, Jimmy Sirfoss, Alexis Kenyon, Shannon Young, Rosanna Longo-Better, and Chris Schultz for their contributions to today's program.